I was on the phone with my brother on the way back, and I was talking to him about everything that's gone down and whatever. And I was somehow convincing myself, like, you never know. You never know with these guys. You never know. So that's the energy I think that we should take into this. And actually, that's where we'll start. Hey, everybody. On this episode of Miami Mic'd Up, I've got Brady Hogg with me. You know him for his work with Five Reasons Sports, Five on the Floor podcast, the young phenom covering the Miami Heat, breaking everything down in the very best Twitter threads that we've got going in the game. A very important member of Heat Twitter. He's here once again on the podcast. So Brady, thank you for joining me for another venture here on Miami Mic'd Up. Before we get into all the basketball, before we get into all the drama of the basketball of the last couple of days, I got to ask you, hey man, what's something outside of work that has brought you a little bit of joy?
Yeah, I think this might be my third appearance on here, so I feel like I have to give a different answer. I feel like the last two times I gave the same answer, so I got to switch it up here. Yeah. I would say just hanging out with family. I mean, that's like the biggest thing that you could do in terms of getting away from basketball and kind of realizing what really matters when we sit here and when you're always on social media or always watching basketball or always on these certain things. It's like, oh, wait, you have to get into the real life part of things. It's funny. I remember there was like a quote from Jimmy a few weeks ago, and I know we're going to be talking a lot of Jimmy, but he was talking about like, you know, this is just a sport, and you know, there's the fact that if we take things too seriously, you have to realize what's like what really matters, and this and that. And it's like everybody was like at the time was like, why is he saying this? Like, we need him locked in. We need him like all the way in on basketball. But it's like if you have that approach, that and then it means everything else that you do, like games, like basketball, and everything else, it's going to be secondary, and you take it more lighthearted, and it's not live and die by this, and it's all on this thing. So it's like, I don't know, I feel like that kind of mindset's important. So I would just say, you know, being around family and being around what matters.
I think that's a really great mentality for you to have at any point in this business, but specifically to have it this early on, I think is a key, because that's the only way that you can be as involved in covering sports, being on social media, and keep that sort of mental health in the right place, because to be able to separate yourself from all of it. But yeah, man, you mentioned him, Jimmy Butler. That's kind of the topic of conversation today. For those of you who are somehow listening to this podcast but don't know the result of what happened on Wednesday night, I guess I'll tell you. The Heat lost by 1 point in Philadelphia to the Philadelphia 76ers, 105-104. A heartbreaking loss. They had, I believe, up to a 12 or 14-point lead in the first half. Incredible zone defense that was keeping them in the game. But the key factor in all of it was Jimmy Butler, playoff Jimmy, play-in Jimmy, injuring his knee early in the game. Pump fake got Kelly Oubre up in the air, flailing around, and he fell down, rolled over on Jimmy Butler's leg. It turns out it is indeed, we're recording this late in the early evening of Thursday night. We now have the news that it was indeed a sprained MCL for Jimmy Butler, which is insane to think that he played on that sprained MCL over the course of the rest of the game. And we can get into some of that in a second. Obviously, huge news going forward, right? The Heat have a game, if you're listening to this tonight, against the Chicago Bulls in Miami at 7 o'clock. But I do want to spend a little bit of time on this game against the Sixers before we get into, you know, looking forward. Your first thoughts when you saw Jimmy's injury, saw the way that it ultimately hampered him, and how do you feel it ultimately impacted the game on Wednesday night?
I think my reaction, your reaction, everybody's reaction was Eric Spoelstra, Pat Riley, and Alonzo Mourning. That was everybody's reaction. Just sitting there and just having the I can't do anything about this, please get up, look on your face, that like this is all we need. We need you to get up so we can get to the next part. And it's like, it's just a tough scene. It's just like you all we did was talk for 82 games about getting to this next portion of the season, the part where Jimmy takes the uptick, the part where this team really starts to become themselves. And it seemed like for a first half, they did. It seemed like they were hitting that portion of the season where Spo started putting out different coverages and running the zone, and guys started just making the game ugly and playing the playoff level that they love to play. Like, as much as some people hated watching it at certain points, it was like, oh, this is what they do.
Yep.
But the Jimmy part just, it hurts. It hurts watching him especially considering the fact that as we always look at last year's playoff run, like, okay, Jimmy was on this super high, but he also was injured. He also got injured in that Knicks series, and he was able to push through it, and he was able to do stuff to finish that series out. He was not healthy all the way in the Boston series, but he looked pretty healthy for the first three or four games or so, and then Miami ended up closing it out. And then the Denver series, you really saw how he was kind of limping through at times, and it was like, okay, if this guy was healthy, what could have been? And it just seems like this is another case of what could have been. It's like, okay, it was like starting a little bit of a run. You felt confident. Jimmy's saying all the right things, saying this is my time of the year. It's playoff Jimmy. It's getting to this portion of when I could get to my level, and obviously that happened. So, worst possible news you could possibly get. It feels like on the game, I feel like we'd be feeling a little bit better if we were talking about a loss in Philly, and it was like, okay, can they recreate
Right.
what they did last year and have like Jimmy just. But it's not this. It's a new
Right.
story, and they're gonna have to try to recreate something else, I guess.
No, it's a great point, and but the irony is that the injuries are sort of the same story of this entire era, which is crazy to think that, you know, I was talking with Wes and David over on Locked On Heat a couple of weeks ago and saying, like, to me, beyond the Big Three era, this is the second best era in Miami Heat history, the Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo era. And yet, one of the things that has been a cornerstone of this era is injuries. You look back at the 2020 finals against the Los Angeles Lakers. I think there's a lot of people inside and outside of Miami that believe if Bam Adebayo and Goran Dragic were healthy, the Heat might have won that finals. You look back to last year, and do I think anybody at the moment thinks that if the Heat were fully healthy, quote unquote, that they would have beat Denver? Probably not the same amount that think they would have beat the Los Angeles Lakers, but injuries marred the regular season of last year. For that matter, even the year they were the one seed, Bam Adebayo was injured for a portion of that year. Last year, Tyler Hero misses an entire playoff run because of injuries. Now this season, they have the most starting lineups in team history because of all of the injuries. And you come into this play-in game, and obviously, you know, there's some folks with you know, hindsight being 2020 that say that's why you take the regular season more seriously and you make sure that you get a couple more wins so you don't have to play in the play-in. Nothing you could do about that when you have the most injuries, literally, in terms of causing starting lineups in the history of the franchise. You get to the point where you're at, and this is another sort of fluke injury to happen, but it really hampers everything, and you could see it with Jimmy going into the half. I think we all were like so mesmerized by the play that he had in the first half, kind of playing on it, that it even had folks who are sort of anti-Heat, anti-Jimmy Butler, anti all of it, saying, oh, he's faking it, he's doing it for the cameras, because he was still effective, particularly on the defensive end. But you could see the moment that the adrenaline wore off and they had to go sit for 20, 30 minutes and then come back out for the second half, that Jimmy was just simply not the same player. He was limping around, he was uncomfortable, and he couldn't have the type of impact on either the offensive or the defensive end. He even said it after the game. He felt like he was hurting the team more than he was helping. And yet, why did he have to remain out there? No Duncan Robinson, no Terry Rozier, the injuries piling up for this team. So it's really unfortunate to see the way that it did. And you know, before we move on to you looking ahead at this game against the Chicago Bulls, I do want to stick with last night's game and the impact of both Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo, because I think both of these guys are pretty polarizing players, not just here in Miami, in the way that there's sort of a sometimes a split and a divide within Heat fandom, but nationally. They're both very polarizing players in the way that they're perceived. Some understanding, you know, the intricacies that make them great, others viewing them as overrated. To me, I was so impressed with the effort that I saw from Bam last night. I mean, obviously on the defensive end, but everything that he was trying to do with screens and trying to get his teammates open. And offensively, you know, being efficient in the shots that he had. And then Tyler Hero literally being forced to carry the entire Heat offense, particularly in the second half. Obviously, it wasn't his most efficient game. He really struggled from the field, particularly in the first half. And if not for all those shots going in toward the end of the game, which was miraculous, and the things that Tyler Hero does, it ends up looking like a really bad game if you're just looking at the box score. So to me, I wonder where you stand, Brady, on the impact of both of these players and how they handled last night's game, particularly given the circumstances of no Terry and no Duncan going in, and then basically no Jimmy throughout the game.
Well, I'll start here. This is their team now. I think that's the way to look at it. Like, this is your guys' team at this point moving forward in this stage of the season. And it's like, you mentioned it. I think the one thing for Bam was the team, him, everybody needs to get him more shots. They needed him to get more looks. I felt like there was too many pockets of the game where they were helping off him out the gate, like to start the game. That's why he shot a three early. That's why he had those opportunities. But they need him. They need him to get shots because it makes everybody else's job easier. It makes the three-point kickouts, you know, there's less opportunity or more opportunity there. Tyler Hero, on the other hand, he was getting his shots. He just wasn't hitting them. Like, it felt like there was – and you mentioned it. It feels like a good – I know everybody wants to talk about the inefficiency and the fact that he was just taking those shots, but it was like if – I'm looking at the half-court offense last night for a good portion of it because you mentioned it. Jimmy, and he said it after the game, he was sitting in the corner. He was a decoy. Yep. He was just out there because he wanted to impact the game, and he was not going to have the ball in his hands. He just wasn't. And you're running these lineups where DeLon and Haywood have to be on the floor because of how great they were playing. They're playing out of their mind defensively. They're walling off that zone. You need them on the floor. So now you're looking around, you're like, okay, Tyler and Bam, that's your fourth and fifth guys. It's like Tyler has to have the ball in his hands, and he's the guy that's going to get us a decent shot. He's the guy that's going to get us a decent look. That's why I felt like, you know, I don't want to do the thing where it's like, oh, they don't have this guy, so they could have used him. But Terry Rozier in a game like that felt like the guy, like a guy that could just create his own shot, get you a decent look, and put you in that position because it was Tyler or nothing at that point. But they need those guys now. Like, that's where you're at. It's like you need those guys to be put in a position to take over this offense. But I think the next step is going to be not being so scripted with it in terms of, like, there were points at the end of the game, and it happens all the time, where it's like they know it's a Tyler Bam pick and roll. They know it's going to be a Tyler pull-up. And if they overplay it, they know it's going to be a Bam pocket pass, and they're going to work out of there. So they can help over on the potential Bam pocket pass. Yep. They could play up on the Tyler pull-up or force him into a tougher look. And it just feels like now when you don't have Jimmy Butler – it makes that everybody's going to key in that, on that even more. So you have to be able to be, you just have to find ways to make things different. You have to add more layers. You have to add different things with Tyler off the ball, catch and shoots, pin downs. You have to let Bam operate a little bit more in the mid post and isolation. Like, now you're hitting this certain point now where I'm looking around and I'm not moving too quickly here.
Right.
With the, in the non Jimmy side of things, but like, that's where they're at. They have to figure that stuff out. So I'm glad you did mention the Jimmy thing, though, because it was important, the fact that he just wanted to be out there because he's just an absolute warrior, and it put them in a weird position. But I will say, to just cap off the Jimmy segment, there was a play with, like, it was 94-90 with 7 minutes left. The ball is inbound on the baseline to the Sixers. Jimmy sprints, steals the ball, goes in the opposite direction. It's a dunk, and he comes back down the court, and you could just see his face. He's holding his knee.
Yeah.
And it's like the fact that he was even out there, it just summarizes his Heat career. It summarizes what he means to this franchise. It summarizes what he means to this fan base, because that play summarizes it all. Like, the fact that he's putting it all out there in a game like that with that type of injury, with a sprained MCL doing that. So he deserves some credit too. As tough as it's been, as ugly of a season as it's gotten to, he deserves credit for the things he's done for this franchise.
I couldn't agree with you more. And if that doesn't, you know, to say the buzzword that I think anybody listening to this wants to hear, but if that doesn't epitomize Heat culture, like, if that's not it sort of exemplified in Jimmy so desperately wanting to contribute, Jimmy so desperately wanting to compete at that level at that time, despite the injury, and really the only way that he was able to, being on the defensive end. I mean, it's really like it's a remarkable test of his strength, and the fact that he was able to do it was really impressive. It's a shame that they couldn't come up with, you know, one more bucket at the time where it mattered. And, you know, we can all relive the Nick Batum potential push in the back, backcourt, we don't know, whatever. I still haven't seen the last 2 minute report.
They said it was not a foul.
Okay, last 2 minute report, all right, that's fine. I'm going to look real stupid on Levitard tomorrow then. Well, anyway, the dynamics that exist there, though, with Tyler and Bam, you know, that you mentioned, is now it's theirs. So regardless of what you think of their performance against the 76ers, and the way that they needed to, you know, Tyler needed to dominate the ball. Bam needed to do the things he did defensively against Joel Embiid. And by the way, faced with a very difficult matchup, people don't talk enough about the fact that Joel Embiid is a top tier defender who weighs like 60 pounds more than Bam. So putting him in the position where you're like, hey, go get 20 shots, it's a lot easier said than done on the offensive end. But now they play the Chicago Bulls. And this is a team holding on to hope that they can just get to the postseason and figure it out from there. Let's start with this game against the Bulls, because the Bulls' record, I don't believe, is indicative of the type of kind of tough, nasty basketball team that they're capable of being. The way that they've played, particularly with Kobe White at the helm. Mm-hmm. To me, I think the award ultimately will go to Tyrese Maxey. But Kobe White maybe should be the most improved player in the NBA. What he's done with his opportunity in Chicago is really impressive. And I think a lot of fans down here don't necessarily know, because the Bulls in a lot of ways have been pretty irrelevant for most of the season. And yet here we are once again. Heat Bulls with a chance to go to the postseason as an 8 seed. So what are the things that you're looking at, Brady, in this matchup that stand out to you right off the bat as, all right, the Heat without Jimmy going up against the Chicago Bulls team?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Kobe White, because that's number one. I look, Miami may not have even had their playoff run last year if it wasn't for the Max Strus game, as we talked about, but we would have been talking about the Kobe White game, because he was that
good amazing in that game. Right.
He was lighting it up. And it's like, those are the type of players that always give Miami trouble. Like, you're not worried about the DeRozans of the world. You're more worried about the Kobe Whites. You're not worried about, you know, Miami always says, like, they'll deal with the Embiids of the world. But the Maxis, the quick, explosive guards that can hit you from different angles, are the players that worry you. So I think that's number one. They're going to have to find a way to contain him. I mean, I don't think we're too worried about the defensive side of things, even though Chicago just put up a bunch of points in this first playing game. Miami has their defensive scheme intact. They have Spo, who could lay out schemes and has their players that can do that. Miami needs to worry about scoring. They have to find a way to score the basketball. They have to find a way to create a totally different offense than they've been building up until this playoff run, because obviously their main guy is gone. And as we just said, they have to find different ways to attack it. So, I mean, different things to look at. I mean, the fact of when Vucevic and Drummond are in the game, there's going to be opportunities to hit pull-ups. So Tyler is not going to care about the last game's inefficiency. He cannot care about the last game's inefficiency. You're going to get great shots in this next game, and you have to attack it. You have to attack those pull-ups and take this shot, because if you don't, if you're now like, oh, okay, I don't want to be the reason that I'm taking too many shots, this and that, Miami doesn't stand a chance against this Bulls team. So he has to be that player.
And that's not, by the way, Tyler Hero's mentality at all. Like,
oh, no.
You saw it last game. He easily could have turned into a guy in that fourth quarter who was like, all right, I guess I got to get my teammates involved. My shot's not falling. And instead, he hit like four insane shots in the final few minutes just to keep the Heat in it. So that's not his mentality at all. He's going to keep shooting.
And I mean, Jimmy and Spo and those guys were probably telling him even in that game, like, we need you to keep shooting. Like, we need you. And now it's even at a different degree. Like, they need him even more to take those shots to set up other guys' shots. As for the role players, the Duncan Robinson thing is kind of the one thing that's like the asterisk right now heading into this game, because it's like he was available this past game and he didn't play. And I was kind of somebody that was very curious about that, because the last game of the regular season, the fact that he was questionable was weird to me, because even if he was healthy, I was like, why would he play in this game? The fact that he was available in this last game, I was like, okay, you're in a one game sample play-in game. This guy has had a back injury. It's hard to work your way in. I don't see Miami really leaning to him a ton, and they didn't lean to him at all. But now I look at this game, now that he's gotten a few extra days, and the fact that they need his offensive scoring and just some type of an offensive valve of some kind, I think he plays, and I think he could be the guy to break it open. But that's the problem. The fact that we're talking about a guy coming off a back injury like that, that could be the one to change the offense, is a tough thing to say. It's just
How do you think his gravity in general by being out there can impact things for this team? Because like you mentioned, right, there are going to be opportunities for playing in the mid-range, particularly for Tyler Hero. When you look down the rest of the roster, there's not exactly a ton of guys on this team that are that comfortable in that area outside of Bam. So how much in your mind is just having Duncan out there in general kind of running around help things?
I mean, Tyler would be thankful more than anybody. He'd be like, oh my God, there's somebody else that can create off the dribble and draw an extra defender. So it's like they need that second guy. As you mentioned, the gravity is the main point here. Like the fact that he's coming off handoffs and he could create 4-on-3s for Bam on the backside, just make things easier for your best players. That's what he can do. And let's just be honest, without Jimmy, you need to shoot the three ball at an exceptional level. You yep. need to just you need to just do what you did in the past and just be able to shoot like crazy. So Duncan Robinson helps in that way as well. But that'll be the big thing. It's like you have to lean into these lineups. You have to be able to lean into these two guys to create for others, because you have all these defensive pieces as your role players right now. And if that players that are not defensive pieces, like defensive cornerstones, are your two young guys yep. that are being put in this position with your backs against the wall. And they're like, okay, we're in this biggest game of the year. You guys have to go do this, this, and this with the ball in your hands, which they will. I mean, Jaime's role is increasing by the minute right now.
That's the guy. That's the guy that I'm looking at. And I'm saying, mm-hmm. all right, well, there were stretches earlier in the year where Jimmy Butler just didn't play for several games in a row. And what did the Heat do? They kind of ran their offense through Jaime Jaquez Jr., playing mm-hmm. that Jimmy Butler role, catching the ball in the mid post, operating from there. I mean, is that your expectation? Like, do you expect to see Jaime in the starting lineup replacing Jimmy Butler and sort of becoming like, all right, here, you go for it? Or, you know, how do we see these things playing out, right? Because you already have a situation where the starting lineup, there's so many guys to replace. Duncan's out, Terry's out. You've already got Caleb Martin in the starting lineup alongside Nico Jovic. To me, I look at this roster and I say, who is at least somewhat capable of duplicating some of what Jimmy does on the offensive end? It's Jaime Jaquez Jr. as a rookie.
It is. It is. And I think the thing is, as much as we're talking about Tyler and Duncan creating offense and things, they create it in the same way. You need a guy that's going to create it in a somewhat similar way to Jimmy, in a somewhat similar spots to Jimmy, and that's what he does. So, like, even if you're going to lean into the pick and roll stuff, you have to have points where you lean into the mid post, and it can't just be Bam. It cannot just be Bam. It has mm-hmm. to be another guy, and that's Jaime. I mean, look, second half of the Philly game last night, they ran the offense through Jaime. How many times did the ball come off the rim and he's dribbling the ball up the floor or running the offense? So it's
it was insane.
It's just funny to see them be put in that position. And I thought the last two games of the season were important for one reason. It was Jaime. He got in a little bit of a flow. He did. He got in a big flow offensively. He started finding his rhythm on the ball. His finishing was there. His drives were there. It seemed like he was in a rhythm again. And I asked Spo about it, and he kept saying, it felt like he was back to his early season self. Like, he felt like he was healthy. He felt like his mind was clear. He knew his role. But now it's a new role. Now the role that he felt like was clear is now jumped to another role. So now he has to take advantage of the opportunity. All these guys want usually is opportunities, and he's going to have it. So they have to find a way to create paint touches and rim attempts. And Jaime's going to be a guy that they're going to walk to right now and say, we need you to be aggressive. We need you to put your head down. And one thing he's going to do is play fast. Yep. And I don't know if that's it. They're not a team that plays fast. We know this. Miami doesn't do it a ton. But, like, I'm looking at this roster right now.
They have to now, man.
They have to.
They have to.
They have to lean into a certain style. And the style is Nikola Jovic plays fast. Bam
Adebayo.
Take the
ball and run.
Can play fast. Jaime Jaquez plays fast. Tyler Hero, transition threes, plays fast. You have all these guys that can do it. And I know what everybody's thinking as well as I'm saying that. They're not a good transition team. They're not a great transition finishing team. But at some point, you have to create easier opportunities, because it's not going to get any easier than that. When you're slowing things down and trying to force, you know, half-court offense, it's going to be tougher on you. So you have to find a way to find pockets of the game to find advantage. And it feels like that's the one advantage for them right now.
The irony is that the other guy who plays fast is the slowest guy on the team in Kevin Love, because he's constantly throwing outlet passes. By the way, to Jaime Jaquez Jr. a lot of the time. We talked about it throughout the season when Kevin Love was out. That was the same time when Jaime Jaquez Jr. was really starting to struggle the most. Why? Mm-hmm. Because Love wasn't there to get him those opportunities to move in transition. You got to imagine there's going to be an emphasis on trying to stack some minutes for those two guys to play together on this team too. And, you know, it's funny, not going back to the Sixers game, but the shame of all of this, and I would imagine you agree here, but maybe your mind sort of sees things differently and you could tell me if I'm wrong. The zone defense that they played, that they broke out, that absolutely stifled Philadelphia, only came out as early as it did in the machinations in which it did because of the foul trouble that Bam was in. And the shame of it is that if the Heat didn't have to do that quite as much in the first half, it could have been the weapon that was their adjustment in the second half of that game, and so could have been more of an advantage rather than at halftime Nick Nurse being able to adjust, putting Joel Embiid at the top of the key and being able to exploit that defense a little bit more. Maybe I'm wrong here. I know that they always go to the zone once Kevin Love is in, but because it all started so much earlier in the game, it messes with your rotations. It messes with your ability to kind of use that as a weapon later on. And so now I'm fascinated to see the way they approach things on the defensive end, because we saw it. DeLon Wright, incredible defensively against Philly. Yeah. Haywood Highsmith, incredible defensively. Caleb Martin, for as poor as he played on the offensive end, had a really good game defensively. And to see those guys, whether it's in the zone defense or matching up one-on-one with all of these different wings on Chicago, is going to be fascinating to me. And so as we go into this game, ultimately, it's Tyler, it's Bam, and seemingly, it's Jaime Jaquez who need to step up on the offensive end and be able to bring things there. So, we'll wrap here. Should the Heat, through their magical, mysterious ways, find an ability to beat the Chicago Bulls, they will match up with the one-seeded Boston Celtics. It's one game at a time. The Heat would be mad that we're even talking about this potential, but we're doing a podcast and that's what we have to do. So, if the Heat find a way to play against Boston, how? Like, I don't even know what question to ask you. But the reality is, all right, as we're saying it, 99.9% chance in any metric that you look at, Boston Celtics win that series, right? What are the things that the Heat could do as you look at Boston to try to exploit them and potentially just steal a game that suddenly makes it, hey, hold on a second, maybe this is a series?
Eric Spoelstra?
Yeah, right.
That's your one, right? Like that's the guy that can possibly form. I mean, we've talked all season about them getting healthy. But we've also noted the fact that when they've been healthy, they've kind of somewhat been worse than when they are healthy. Like, it's a weird thing. It's just a weird scenario that it's like...
Look, there were times in this year where their offense just flatly looked better when Jimmy wasn't playing.
It's just like, whenever there's a guy down, it feels like Spo coaches in a different way. And it's like, okay, I have to do... When it's like the game plan becomes simpler for him, it feels like has more of a grasp on it. And it's like, okay, I can just now work my way through these couple guys and I can do this, this, and this. So now this is a scenario on a much greater scale in a 7-game series against this potential, you know, Boston Celtics team. I mean, I hate to repeat myself, but it's like you have to shoot the ball better than 30-35% from three. Right. Like you have to be shooting at a really high level to just keep it in the game, because I'm looking at the way this offense is running right now. Like, you can't keep up with that Boston offense if you're playing at this level. You have to be able to score a decent bit. But as well as I say that, defensively, I mean, I think they're going to play bigger if in this instance. Like, I think you're going to see a lot more of Kevin Love and Bam, just because they've done a lot of staggering this season. We've seen the Love and Jimmy lineups. They've done a lot of that because of the zone, as you mentioned. When the non-Bam minutes, they can go zone. But it's also the offensive connection between Jimmy and Love, the high-low stuff. It's an easy offensive valve. They don't have that anymore. Now it's time to lean into the Love-Bam stuff. Play a little bigger, find ways to stretch the floor, give Bam a little bit more opportunities. And again, in a series against Boston, you're going to have to match up bigger. You just will have to. So, I mean, that it sounds cliche, but Eric Spoelstra is the answer in that instance. Like, it's like, can you find, just catch some fire a little bit with him just finding things throughout a series, whether it's like, okay, we like this matchup with Jaime drawing this mismatch in the post, or if it's this thing or if that thing. Like, they have to find just little tiny advantages, because if you just go out there, roll the ball out and play basketball, Boston Celtics are winning every time. Right. Like, they have that type of style. They have the isolation, talent, and all of those things. So if you could just try, and this is what they will try to do, just make it ugly. That would be the scenario. Just make it as ugly as possible and make it a disgusting basketball game, like kind of like it was against Philly, but even though it kind of broke out, but make it ugly. That's your way of winning. And that's just the way Miami's always going to be built to do. They're going to make it that type of basketball game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the main goal. And when you look at playing multiple bigs at the same time, I tend to agree with you that that would be a different wrinkle that you could throw out there of, hey, these guys are capable of playing together. We just haven't seen it that much. But knowing the fact that we're breaking this all down, what'll end up happening is it'll be like game two in Boston and a lineup with like Jovic, Hawkes, DeLon Wright, Haywood Highsmith, and Caleb Martin will suddenly go on like a 20-2 run, and that'll be the difference. And we'll be like, I don't know what happened. It was magic. And that was the end of it. So this has been, to me, very informative, Brady. If there's, before we wrap this up, if you've got Heat fans looking at one particular matchup tonight as they go into this game against the Chicago Bulls. You mentioned Kobe White as a huge X factor for them, but if you're looking at any particular matchup or any particular space on the floor to highlight, obviously you got the Heat shooting well from three, playing well on the defensive end. What's the biggest thing you're looking at going into tonight's game?
I would say it's a matchup, and I think it's Bam Adebayo versus Nikola Vucevic. Like, my Heat fans know from pre-Bulls days what this guy
can do.
Absolute Heat killer. He is. Yeah. And there's just been points where you cannot let him get comfortable. And I think it's just like, it gets to a point now where the order here is everybody's bumping up one, and now Bam is your number one guy. He has to dominate that matchup, it feels like, if in order to win this game. So it's like, you have to be able to guard your yard, as he likes to say, and kind of stay on Vucevic, because they can do a little bit of switching here because, as you mentioned, they are a wing-heavy team, and you can kind of switch around. But I think the goal is, we were talking about starting lineups before, and we were saying maybe Jaime jumps in. I kind of feel it's a possibility Haywood jumps into the starting three, and they say, go bother them. Go guard DeRozan. We'll put Caleb on Kobe White, and let's just go play this ugly style. And now it's on the Tylers and the Bams of the world to create offensively. So I think they're going to do that. Like, I'm not worried about that. I think they'll chase those guys around, and Bam will play the backside. But it's just like, I think if the Vucevic thing opens everybody up, because now if they start having to worry about him and Bam has to pull over a little bit more, and he has to, he can't help as hard and things like that, and now Kobe White's getting going to the rim, or DeRozan has one-on-one opportunities, that'll be what hurts them down the line in that game. It just will. So I think out the gate, if they can find a way to just stuff him a little bit and let Bam just dominate offensively in a way to get shots, just – if you go out, if you're going to go out in this game, just go out with Bam Adebayo shooting the basketball. You have to. You cannot have a game where he does not have a lot of shot attempts. You have to. So that'll be the key. And let me just mention one other name, because I feel like we haven't mentioned him a lot. You just mentioned him. Nikola Jovic. I mean, talk about an opportunity. I mean, the guy has been on an incredible run right now. I think the one upside to this season for all Heat fans is the fact that Nikola Jovic has improved to new levels. Like, we went from Jimmy Butler attending his Sioux Falls game to now Jimmy Butler will be attending his playoff game, as he's starting in this one. So it's like, the turnaround we've seen, this is his opportunity. He's going to get more shots. He's going to get more looks. And look, if you wanted a wrinkle, as you mentioned before, like a unique wrinkle, it's using your own unicorn. It's using your own guy that teams legit do not have a ton of film on. Like, there's things that they know with the spot up looks and different things. But in terms of putting the ball in his hands, different things, this is the one thing that they have kind of behind a curtain and could pull out of their back pocket. So if there was a player I'd look at, like if it was like, who's going to have the Max Strus game against the Chicago Bulls? Nikola Jovic, possibly.
All right, we've got it. Now I've got it on tape. So when it happens, we could put it out there. I was just looking, as you were saying that, I was looking back through the play-by-play and the box score. This is going to be a game that's tied with 5 minutes to go, right?
Ugh.
Like, it's inevitable, 100%. Right? It's inevitable. Like, no matter how it ends up, the Heat could lose or win by 20, but it's going to be tied with 5 minutes left. I just feel it, and we're all going to be sitting on pins and needles once again at the Kaseya Center. So it's going to be a blast. And here's hoping that you guys get some more games on Bally Sports, because that means the Heat will have advanced to the first round against the Boston Celtics, where game one would be Sunday at 1 o'clock. Right now, you got a 7 o'clock game, ESPN. Should be a lot of fun to watch the Heat and the Bulls. Brady, thanks for stopping by once again, man. Really enjoyed this conversation. And hopefully, I won't just be seeing you tonight for this game, but I'll be seeing you again next weekend for game three of Miami.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. I hope I see you at a game three and four. And maybe a game six, you know?
And a game six. Who knows?